This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions, because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
And a fun good morning, one and all.
And a big welcome back to you, Franklin.
Well, thank you. I
love you, but just so fortunate.
My gosh, I was so fortunate to be away for one of the coldest snaps this early in the month.
I know.
I couldn't believe it. We're down there in Florida and enjoying, for the most part, good weather.
Yeah.
Like, temps in the high 80s.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yes, indeed it is.
That's really good.
And everything was going along smoothly until, well, a couple of days ago. Then the cloudy weather moved in, the rainy weather.
I guess.
Yeah, and a lot of rain, plus the fact that the pool heater quit.
So you had to wear your long underwear in the pool.
Yeah, there you go.
I tell you, that must
I know,
have
that
just
little
been
trap door, I'm
so
telling you.
Frustrating.
it was not nice. Yeah, and dumped on with rain.
So let's hunker down and play some cards or something.
Yeah.
But still, nice holiday. You look very rested.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. No, it was lovely. Shirley's still there.
Mm.
And she might even be tuned in this morning. I don't know whether I set her up on the phone with, she can, you know, dial us in. As it were.
Oh, that sounds very technical.
Listen live.
Listen live and listen on the web, and you can watch as well, not just
exactly.
listen.
Exactly. Oh, my. We are so entertaining.
Not really.
All right.
Go back to bed, Shirley.
All right. Let me get the phone numbers on the air here. That's my main job. In Toronto, here's the number to call to reach Charlie Dobbin, the master gardener here at Zoomer Radio, 416-360-0740. Then anywhere in the province, it is toll free. 1-866-740-4740. Our little mantra goes this way. Call early, call often. One question per call.
What a great mantra.
Patrolman Proctor will pull you over, give you a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And if you happen to be a first-time caller, let... who's it?
Duncan.
Duncan.
You were just going to say Sebastian.
That's right. Yeah.
I saw it.
Just a second.
It's Duncan. He's the best.
Yes.
And he's really good at asking the right questions, getting the information up on the board for us.
So. Anyway, that little bell will precede you coming to the air.
And you get
indicating
wings.
That you get your garden wings.
Garden wings.
Yeah,
so you can float up over the garden.
Yeah, exactly.
And get a good view. Different view, right? Bird's eye view of the garden. It's a really nice to change up when we do it. Because this is what we do at this time of year. We think about what worked in the garden, what didn't work in the garden, what would I do differently next year. Of course, in my case, I still have a huge big blank slate.
Oh,
so
what
will I do
How's
in my garden?
How's that going, by the way? Yeah.
It's got some snow on it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, an interesting kind of a story was that I brought plants from Richmond Hill that I dug up in the 90-degree July and August weather we were having. So pots and pots of plants. Now, they can't live above ground. They will freeze solid and die if I just left them. And, of course, I can't plant them because the soil is construction soil. And so a friend, a lovely young man from Live Landscaping, got himself a backhoe and dug a big pit in my concrete yard, and we put all the pots in there.
Covered them up
with some beautiful triple mix that I had delivered. It all looked really good. They were just happy, happy. Winter was coming, and then it started to rain. This a couple weeks ago. And it rained and it rained and it rained, and I had a swimming pool. the poor little pots were bobbing around in the swimming pool.
Oh, gosh.
So I had to get them out of there because that's the last place they're going to survive is underwater. Got them out of there, and then Elliot and I came up with a different location down in the back 40 where we actually could dig by hand into the old, it's actually old farmland, right?
Yeah.
So it's old original soil there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the plants are much happier. They're not underwater. And
and they're going to survive.
I hope so. Yeah. That's my plan. I considering what I've done before them already, if they don't survive, I'm going to be very angry.
Okay.
So just really quickly before we must go to a break, I want to say thanks again to Sean James, who joined me last week when Frank was away. Sean James-consulting.ca is his website. He is going to be at Carson's Garden and Market. So Carson Arthur is a fairly well-known HGTV personality, et cetera. So Sean, next Saturday is at Carson's Garden and Market, which is now in my neck of the woods in Hillier, Prince Edward County at 1317 Wilson Road. So that's next Saturday, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. His topic is plants that support local birds.
Right.
And I will be jumping in my Learjet after the show next Saturday to race on down because I promised Sean I was coming to heckle him at that event. So it's
good. Right.
And I've got a few friends coming. So we're going to really, you know, boost the place up. It's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to seeing Carson's Garden Center. Couple of things going on this week. This Monday, remember the Blenheim Hort Society is hosting their annual potluck dinner and speaker. 59 Ellen Street in Blenheim.
All
Margaret Dudley is the speaker. She's a master gardener and a well-known speaker. Bring your favorite dish. Join them for a night of good food and entertainment and fun. Tuesday this week, the East Gwillimbury Gardeners Annual General Meeting and Awards Night is happening. That's with guest Michael Erdman, who's going to demonstrate easy floral arrangements for the holiday season. That's at the Mount Albert Lions Community Center, 5057 Mount Albert Road in Mount Albert. That's in your neighborhood. All are welcome. No charge. Please bring a donation for the local food bank.
Okay.
That's what I got for now.
All right, my love. We have Natalie on hold from Richmond Hill, your old stomping grounds. So we'll be checking
also one
in.
Of my students.
Oh, is that right?
Yep.
Oh, wonderful. Yep. Okay. Well, we'll welcome Natalie to the show in moments here on Zoomer Radio. It's The Garden Show and, of course, starring Charlie Dobbin. We'll be back in a moment.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All righty, Charlie. Let me just first mention we have two first-time callers online.
Ooh, you're going to get some exercise.
So that means, though, there are a couple of lines that are still open right now. And if you call in, you've been saying to yourself, gosh, I'd like to give Charlie a ding-a-ding. And so now would be the right time to do that, okay? Meantime, here is a little welcome.
Big
to
welcome
Natalie, first-time
Natalie.
Caller.
Natalie, good morning.
Hi, Natalie.
Morning, Charlie. Good morning, Frank.
How's things?
Things are good.
All right. What's going on?
My question is, I've been so busy with school that although Charlie gave me the advice to apply the nematodes to my damaged lawn where I think I'm having a grub problem, I didn't do it. And I'm wondering, come spring, what are my options?
Oh, life gets in the way, doesn't it?
Life gets in the way.
I know. So, all right. So I want to just welcome Natalie to the show. She is one of my students at Durham College. And, you know, I totally enjoy her in my first year class, horticulture technician class. So you're right. Did you buy those nematodes? Are they sitting on the counter somewhere or in the fridge?
I bought them. I mixed them. I put them in the fridge and I've been using them with my other plants.
Like indoor plants?
Like in my soil and I did try to throw it down in the grass, but I knew it was too late.
Yeah. Likely, because as I explained to you at the time, the grubs who may have been chewing on the roots of in an area on your lawn and turning it all yellow this fall, this late summer and fall, they're smart. They don't need to watch the weather network. They knew cold weather was coming and they start heading down. Yeah, so you can't get the nematodes to the grubs now. They're down too deep. So you're right. You could use them wherever you suspect you have some kind of animals of any kind in your soil. That should work. They're pretty specific, though. Remember, those grubs are pretty specific to those nematodes. Sorry, are specific to the grubs that we are challenged with in our lawns. So for now, a couple of things. A lot of people got caught with their pants down, so to speak, or their rake still hanging up when the snow fell. So leaves all over our lawns, snow on top of those leaves. Those leaves are suffocating the lawns beneath. I'm quite confident that the snow is going to melt and we are going to get a break. We're going to get back to more normal fall sort of environment. Once that snow is a little thinner or melted away, gentle raking, get those leaves off the lawn. The nematodes you'd be basically wasting those away. But next spring, when those grubs come back up, as far as I know, there is nothing you can do to control those grubs in the spring. They're much bigger, they're fatter, they're tougher. The nematodes won't do the job in the spring, but the starlings will, the raccoons will, the skunks will. Lots of wildlife will happily eat those grubs, so you're just going to have to let them do it and then fix your lawn afterwards.
Yeah, it'll be before the latter part of August.
No, but before that, you'll fix your lawn because they'll pupate, so the actual larva will become little cocoons, and when that happens, you can get your lawn back in order. Rake it level, top dress, overseed, all that stuff. That's usually late May, early June.
Yeah.
And then you're right. Early August, get those nematodes.
I'll do that next year for sure.
Okay.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for joining us. Thanks, Natalie.
Don't be a stranger.
Yeah,
you know what we say, coffee's always on.
And as Frank reaches for the bell one more time.
Yeah.
Hey, that's for Seymour in Aurora. Welcome to the show, Seymour.
Thank you so much, sir. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So my situation, we live in about 2 acres, and I have about maybe 70 Colorado blue spruces.
Wow.
And as you know, there's a problem with them such that the foliage start dying from the lower branches moving upwards from inside outwards. Right. I presume you're familiar with this.
Yeah. Problem. You know what? Okay, so carry on. I'm listening. Because there was something that was a big deal about 15 years ago. I'm not sure if it's the same disease. It was a fungal disease.
Yeah, it's probably the same problem.
Probably.
So, you know, it really affects the majestic nature of these beautiful trees. And my approach has been to remove the dead branches as they appear.
Right.
But, you know, the trees end up not looking as beautiful as they normally do. I just wondered if you're familiar with any approach that might be effective in handling this problem.
Yeah, I think what you've got is something commonly called needle cast. So brown needles on blue spruces, leaving bare branches behind. Blue spruce being very susceptible. It is a fungal disease.
I see.
So it begins on the lower branches, which is why that's exactly what you've got going on. It works its way upwards.
Right.
Eventually, the entire plant ends up dying. So I'm just trying to remember what we did because my neighbor had this back in Richmond Hill years ago.
Yeah, so you know, I brought an arborist in.
Okay, yeah.
And because I have so many, it's prohibitively expensive to do what they suggest, like spraying, deep root feeding, all that kind of stuff, you know. But that was their approach to it, you know. And
well, that actually makes sense. I mean, so often when a plant is infested, whether it's by an insect or a disease, it's because that plant is under stress of some kind.
Did.
So you could yourself, and something I have used and had good success with, definitely you can pay an arborist to deep root feed. But you can also go to your local, you know, Home Hardware, Canadian Tire, and buy something which is a deep root feeder gizmo that goes, it's called a Ross, R-O-S-S, Ross root feeder.
I see.
Goes on your hose, assuming your hose can get out to all these 70 trees.
Right.
And then you buy the pellets. It's got fertilizer, evergreen pellets that go in a little cylinder. And of course, you would follow the instructions as to when you would do this. But the point is the probe goes down. It's about a meter down into the soil.
I see.
And you inject the fertilizer down at that level instead of it going on the surface of the soil where the whatever's growing on the surface, whether it's lawn or, you know, meadow, meadow or whatever, they'll take all that fertilizer. So if you can get it down deeper, you can get it down to the roots. And that's something you can do yourself at, you know, a minimal cost compared to what you would pay an arborist. It's
I'll pay attention to that.
Yeah. Also, I think seriously about making sure there's not a lot of competition around the plants in terms of weeds and things. So,
there are a zillion. The property is very thickly treed, so there are all sorts of maples and so on
in amongst there.
You know, amongst the blue spruces. Mm-hmm. I have removed many trees over the last, many years. We've been here about 30 years.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, we did the landscaping, so the trees are really small when we planted them.
Funny how that works.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very majestic now.
Yeah, but I bet.
As I said, the property is very thickly treed.
Yeah, nice.
And I have tried to thin out as best. I probably have removed maybe 60 trees.
Wow. So you must have planted like hundreds originally.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
But that, you see, I think that's a part of the problem, you know, too much competition.
Yeah. Well, competition and also lack of air circulation. See, that's the blue spruce would definitely suffer from that. If, you know, maples are such dense plants with big leaves. So all those trees all crammed in together, you don't get much sun penetration and particularly air circulation.
Right.
And that's when fungal diseases are super happy as
I get you. Okay. Well, yeah. I'm doing my best, as I said, to prune as much as I can. Yeah. Like, even with the maples, removing lower branches, as you said, allowing more air and light and so on. And I really think it's helping.
Probably. And you know what? I'm just thinking, so you're in Aurora. You know, Seneca King Campus, so it's not that far. King City's not that far.
Yeah, I know where it is.
They have an environmental program. So you know what you need? You need a student. You need somebody who is in training as an arborist or
as in
that business who would love to practice some of their skills on a property like yours and would charge you minimal amount of money to do so.
Yeah, that's a great idea, and I'm going to pursue that.
That's what I would do.
That campus and see what I can arrange.
Yeah, you never know, right?
There you are.
And Seneca also does have an arboriculture program as well. So, I mean,
okay.
It's just maybe because for your size property, that might be just the perfect solution.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Okay. Seymour, keep
so
in
much.
Touch with us.
I appreciate your help.
Okay.
Our pleasure.
Yeah.
Good luck with
Let
that.
Let us know how you get on with that,
okay? Sounds pretty beautiful
Particularly
where you are.
Contacting a student to help out. I think that's a great
idea.
Well,
I've done that. Because I had back in Richmond Hill, I had two separate young men go on to arboriculture school, and they were super handy to put to work on my neighbor's yards, particularly because I would be telling my neighbor, you need to prune that. And they'd say, well, will you do it? And I'd say, well, you know, Joe down the street will do it for half what I would charge you. So why don't you hire that kid?
Right. We have to take a little break here, but we do have other callers on the line, including another first-time caller.
Wow.
My golly, we're busy this morning with that. But we will return and head off to plod along to Picton with Tom in mind.
Nice.
That's coming up next here on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All righty, Charlie. Time to, yes.
Yeah.
Oops.
Wait one second.
Wait, hold on.
A quick text because, you know, I have my people working in the background. Thank you, Paul. Paul DeGroote sent a quick text, and he's suggesting that Seymour in Aurora with all those blue spruces might want to consider making an effort, a consistent effort, to mow the grass under the blue spruces if he can.
All right.
Paul says there was some talk roughly years ago when this became a big deal, this particular disease, that the fungus was wintering in the tall weeds or grass beneath the trees.
Okay.
And keeping in mind that fungal diseases are always very, very prolific when we have very wet springs. We had a very wet spring this past 2019. Mm-hmm. So that also could be contributing to there being a real obvious outbreak of the disease this past summer.
Well, hopefully that's a helpful suggestion.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Yeah. Way to go, Paul. All righty. Tom in Picton. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Yes. I just moved into a house in the county, and we have a lot of these beetles that look like ladybugs, but they're not the bright orange dotted things. They're more of a rusty brown.
They have spots or stripes?
Neither. They're just a dull, rusty color.
Okay. And they're inside your house?
Pardon?
Are they inside your house?
Yes. Yes, they are.
Okay. So you know what that is? It's likely an insect called box elder beetle, and they, just like ladybugs, in the fall are looking for a place to stay warm for the winter. And they are quite interesting that they can make themselves very small, and they love any little crack or cranny or crevice that they can squeeze their little bodies into, and they will very happily hunker down for the winter, sleeping away as winter goes on, and then in the spring we'll get a nice warm sunny day and they'll all wake up, and all of a sudden your walls will be crawling with
either lady
beetles or box elder bugs or any of these. Some of them are actually stink bugs, so you don't want to squish them because they do stink and they stain your walls. So for your purposes at this point, it's really a vacuum. Just vacuum when they're out there. And of course, if you leave the vacuum outside, if you can, if it's a handheld vacuum, they will die in the vacuum bag outside in all this cold, because you don't want to leave the vacuum inside because they could potentially crawl back out. But don't squish them.
Oh, yeah.
So wow. Unlike a ladybug, are they beneficial?
You know what? Most insects have do something beneficial in the sense that they either pollinate or they eat something. We know, you know, lady beetles are so famous for eating aphids. Stink bugs, at this point, I can't remember exactly what they're eating. They do not necessarily eat, as far as I recall, any, well, it depends. There's so many different kinds. They're unlikely doing any damage, but they're really just looking for a winter. They want to go to Florida, really. So they're hoping that your house will be their Florida. So don't hesitate to shoo them out, but be very careful about squishing.
Yep.
They don't smell good.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Tom. All the
good
best.
Luck with that.
When I was down in Florida, I picked up a copy of the New York Times one day,
and there
was an interesting article in there about the absence, or at least the lack of insects in the world. It's getting dangerous where they're not being so prevalent that they can go and
do the pollination.
Pollination. Yeah, exactly right.
Well, because 1/3 of the foods we eat are pollinated by insects.
Yeah.
So with no insects, we lose 30% of our foods and some of the foods that we love.
Yep.
You know, peaches, strawberries,
like
cherries, squashes, apples, all of it.
There you go.
So it's a good thing to be concerned about.
Yep. All righty. Hey, out there in Mississauga is Peter. First time caller. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Okay. I have an almond tree that about 10 years ago when I was digging in my rock garden, I found this almond sprouted. Uh-huh. It's about 3 feet tall. Mm-hmm. Now, about 3 years ago, it blossomed and I had the almond things on them.
Wow.
But it hasn't blossomed since. So I was wondering, how do I get it to blossom again?
Move to California. I'm surprised. You saw the almond, like that it had grown from an actual almond.
Well, yeah, the almond itself had just sprouted its roots and its stem.
Nice. And
so I got it in a big pot and I put it in my garage through the wintertime.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So you do have it protected.
And then
okay.
I bring it out when it starts to sprout.
Nice.
And it had beautiful pink blossoms on it there about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And it formed the big almond pods, whatever you want to call them, which the squirrels love.
I bet.
Yeah.
But it hasn't blossomed since, so I was wondering, is there something I can do to get it to blossom again?
All right, so what I would do is I would do the things that we would traditionally do to encourage flowering plants to flower. Does it need to be, how's it growing? Does the growth habit look nice, or did you need to do some pruning on it at some point?
No, it's growing fine. Okay. I had the odd little dead stem coming off a branch. I got rid of that.
Yeah, you can prune dead stuff anytime. I was going to say late winter, early spring, if it does require some pruning, if you've got branches that are crisscrossing or rubbing together or growing to the inside of the plant.
Open up the air around.
Exactly. We like those open canopies.
No, the branches are all open.
Yeah, good. So I was going to say, if you're going to do any pruning, that's the time to do it. And at that point, of course, the days are getting longer. Plants are starting to respond to longer days and more sunshine. So I would... assuming the pot is a big enough pot and it's not super pot bound, then I would leave it in the pot it's in. And do you fertilize? Have you fertilized at all?
No, I haven't. Well, actually, I guess I did once with Miracle-Gro.
Okay. So you could use Miracle-Gro, which is a synthetic fertilizer designed to encourage blooming. Or you could say, okay, I'd prefer to add some compost to my pot in my soil or some composted manure, something that's going to really feed the plant a little slower than Miracle-Gro, but still feed it. Because organic fertilizers do feed, but they just feed in a more steady, slow rate rather than a sort of plants on steroids, which is the way Miracle-Gro works. It's like a real shot in the arm when we add it to the soil. Either way, I would encourage some blooming with some fertilizer once the plant is actively growing in the spring, so late spring, early summer. And you should start to see buds, of course, flower buds would be forming in the spring. So keep an eye, get it into as much sun as you possibly can. Get it outside as soon as you can in the spring, but be careful of frost.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
All right,
Peter, thanks for joining us.
Good luck.
On this
it's interesting.
Saturday morning.
How often do you have a raw almond kicking around that germinates? Usually, like, they're roasted and salted and smoked and all that stuff. I mean, I've had a lot of mangoes germinate in my compost bins.
Yeah, because
you know, you throw the pits in there and they take forever to decompose. But while they're decomposing, they grow. And it's like, no, I don't think I want a mango tree. They're very big trees. They're beautiful, but they're very big.
Yeah. Off to Mississauga again. And Lauren is on the line. Good morning, Lauren. Welcome to the show. Hi, Lauren.
Good morning.
Lauren.
Yep, go ahead.
Yes, I'm here.
Yep, what's going on at your place?
Oh, I have some tulip. I'm not sure that they're tulip or daffodil bulbs.
Okay, yep.
I never got to plant them.
Oh, dear.
And I'd like to know if I can plant them now.
Yep.
So I could have, so they could grow in February or something.
Okay, so if you're, did you want to plant them so they'll grow inside your house, or do you have a garden outside you wanted to plant them in?
Yes, I have a garden. Well, I want to plant them in the pots.
Okay, so you want to force them to grow in pots, and then they'll bloom inside your house.
Okay.
Is that your plan? So that's fine. I mean, assuming, so some bulbs are better than others. Some varieties of bulbs are better than others when it comes to blooming indoors and forcing them to grow indoors. But for anybody who's sitting on bags of bulbs and doesn't want to put on their long underwear and go out there and shovel snow and get the bulbs in the ground before the ground freezes, which I would highly recommend doing today or tomorrow if you can. Tomorrow is actually optimal because it's going to be sunny and warmer. And you want to get them to bloom indoors, what you need is some nice sterile potting soil or soilless mix, container mix, clean pots. You will fill the pots 2/3 full with moist container growing mix. Whatever bulbs you have, pointy end up, fill the bulbs. Even when the bulbs touch each other, it's okay in the pots. And the little pointy ends will just stick out of the top of the pots versus in the ground. We bury them much deeper. But in a pot, we basically have those bulbs really almost on the surface. Now, more moist potting soil all around, a thorough watering of these newly planted bulbs into the pots that, of course, have drainage holes. Drain out all that water. Bag your pots of bulbs into dark green garbage bags or any kind of a dark plastic bag, tie it up, stick it in the fridge. This is assuming you've got room in the fridge for all this. Into the fridge it goes, and put a date on it. So if it's going in the fridge, you know, November, whatever, 15th, 16th, give yourself 12 weeks. In 12 weeks, pull out the bag, open it up, and they will have started to grow. They will be white because they're in the dark, and you'll get them out onto a nice sunny window ledge, and of course they'll turn green in the sunshine and be blooming and causing an incredible amount of cheerfulness for you about, you know, 13, 14, 15 weeks from now.
Wow. How's that sound to you, Lauren?
How much do I feed them?
You don't need to feed them at all. They have everything they need right inside those bulbs.
Now, how do I tell the difference between a tulip and a daffodil?
Well, they look very different. A tulip is a sort of almost an apricot brown-colored jacket on it. It's you know, it's called a tunic, the outer paper covering on a tulip, and under that is a very white traditional looking bulb, whereas a daffodil is much more of a brown, gnarly looking thing. So very sort of different looking bulbs, but any of them can be forced. Like I say, some are better than others for forcing. Usually the shorter the bulb, the better it forces, because the tall ones tend to topple over inside our homes. Let us know how that goes.
Okay, Lauren, thank you very much. This would be a darn good time to call because we do have several lines open right now in Toronto. If you're listening in, you want to pose a question to Charlie, 416-360-0740. And then anywhere in the province, of course, toll free, 1-866-740-4740. We'll be along to stay in Toronto, as a matter of fact, to say hi to Ed in just moments here on The Garden Show as we broadcast live and direct from the Zoomerplex in Liberty Village.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Okay, Charlie, just around the corner maybe here in Toronto is Ed, and he's on the line ready to say hi. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good morning.
I have a Norfolk Island pine.
Yes.
I've had it for about 15 years or more. It's nice. Grown quite tall in my living room. Mm-hmm. I always keep it inside, but the lower branches have died off. Mm-hmm. It's only about the top third have branches. Mm-hmm. My question is there any way that I can prune the top and will it sprout branches on the bottom?
No.
It's time to get a new tree.
Your hand, no, you know what you can do? If you're interested and you want to do this as a project, Google air layering. So air, A-I-R, and then layering.
Write that down.
Write that down.
Air layering?
Layering. Like a layer cake, but layering.
Right.
So air layering is a form of propagation of plants like you have. So you've got lots of nice growth on the top, virtually no growth on the bottom, and then there's no way in the world you want to take that top off. You take that, chop that top off, and now you lose the form of the plant. A Norfolk Island pine is a pure, should be a pyramidal shaped plant with a terminal bud in the top. And so if you're interested to try and propagate it, and what you would do in a nutshell is you get a hold of some sphagnum moss. First off, you need about 2 cups or 3 cups of good quality sterile sphagnum moss. And then
where would I get the,
at any garden center. You know, and
is
this time
it's called sphagnum?
Sphagnum moss, yeah.
Right.
Sphagnum moss is quite magical because it holds up to 20 times its weight in water.
Wow.
So with a razor blade, you would do some slicing on the bark of the tree below where the green branches are, and where that is going to happen. It's hard to say over the radio, but roughly a foot or so down from the greenest branch. So you do some very, very light slicing into the bark all the way around, or you'd even remove the bark all the way around, girdling the plant. You take your moist sphagnum moss, which you've moistened, wet it, and wrung it out. You wrap that moss all around that spot where you've just removed all the bark. Then you take either tin foil or plastic wrap and you wrap the sphagnum moss and you tie it at the top and the bottom around the trunk of the tree and you leave it there. Wow. 3 to 4 months from now, roots will have grown from where you removed the bark. And once that those roots are there, then you can get out your little saw and you can cut off the top. So you've got the top of the tree. You now have roots just below all that green growth. Just chop through that. Repot this new cutting, if you will, the newly propagated plant. And then you can throw out the bottom if you want, which is the current pot and all the naked branches at the bottom.
Wow.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. It's a good project. It's not overnight. It takes a few months for those roots to grow. But there's very good information on, obviously, YouTube and on the web in general.
It's almost magical, for gosh sakes.
Yeah. It's funny. I was just teaching this technique yesterday. it is a good one. I'd love to do it with my students, if I had some plants to do it with. And then you need that time frame. And if you use plastic wrap, you'll see the roots starting to grow. If you use tin foil, you have to check every now and then just to see what's going on.
You wrap the plastic wrap right around all of the moss, correct?
Yep, and then just tie it at the top and bottom with a little string.
Keep it in place.
Keep it in place because you want a nice firm, the moss has to be firmly around that where you've wounded the plant.
Right.
It's because you do that wounding and bark removal that the plant responds to heal the wound. And because plants are so incredible and they can do anything when they start cell division, it will grow roots because you're going to give it that nice moist moss. The plant will grow roots.
Interesting.
Well, how about that?
There you go.
I have to just say one thing. Last week I called you about bugs or flies in on my trees. And you mentioned the stickix. I think it's called the little sticks that you put in the ground.
Yep.
It worked perfect.
Excellent. Oh, yeah, the sticky
quick
sticks.
Quick question,
work.
And that'll be my last one. Because I have hibiscus, and I get white flies sometimes in the winter. Will these same stickets work with these as well?
Yes, they will, because white fly fly. Yeah. Any flying insect is attracted to the yellow.
Okay, well, listen, thank you so much. I love your show.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
I want to hear from you in 4 months when your Norfolk Island pine is now shorter and in a new pot.
That really is amazing, that whole deal. All right, you know what? We have to take a little bit of a break here because we have 3 other callers at least to get to, including Carol in Mississauga, who's next up here on The Garden Show from Zoomer Radio.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin
exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
All righty, Charlie, let's go to our final little segment here and start off by going to Mississauga. There's Carol on the line. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about my wisteria.
Yes.
It's many years old, and a couple of springs it took a late frost and was quite stunted and shocked, but this year it seems to have thrived really well and thickened up and grown, and I got a seed pod. I've got two little seeds. They're flat, and I'm wondering, what do I do with them? I'd like to have them grow.
Okay, so you can do that. They're not hard to grow from seed. Keep in mind, though, a couple of things. One is, from seed, it can take up to 20 years for a wisteria to flower.
Oh, my Lord.
So it's a very long-term project.
Oh, geez. That long.
Yeah. So if you know that, and you never know what the flowers will be, because the seeds coming off of the plant will not necessarily be the same as the plant they come from.
Yeah, that was one of my questions.
Yeah. So you've got a pod, you've got a couple seeds. In your case, you have two options. You could plant them indoors around about February or March, start them in a moist, you know, just a small pot with some pot, like a seed germination mix. They should germinate quite readily. And then you would take them outside once we're frost free. You would harden them off and get them out into the real world. Or you could just wait and plant them directly outside, in the sort of early mid spring, not when the soil is too cold, but, once it warms up a bit, sort of you're in Mississauga. So maybe late May, depending on the kind of spring we're having. Again, they will grow, but they can take up to 2 months for the seeds to germinate. So be patient, and then another 20 years to flower. So lots of patience for this one.
Yeah, okay.
But not hard to grow. Yeah. Just keep in mind that wisteria is a very vigorous plant, as I'm sure you know, and they can become very, very large and very heavy. So whatever you have them growing on, make sure it's a very solid structure they're growing on.
Stable.
Yeah, whether it's a fence or, an arbor or whatever. No little rinky-dink thin thing you bought at Home Depot. Make sure it's a really solid piece of furniture, because wisteria do live for many, many years, and they do weigh a ton, and they'll break things.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol.
You're very welcome.
All right. Let me reach for the bell here. My gosh, we're going to Richmond Hill.
This is great.
Hey, that's for Catherine. Good morning, first-time caller.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine. Welcome to the show.
I'm in constant awe of the both of you, so thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Right. I have a question about a 6-foot-tall ficus tree.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got this braided branch.
Yep.
My daughter actually took it back in summer from her 25th-level Toronto brightly lit office back to my home in Richmond Hill.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't part with it because they were moving office. So it's sitting in my lobby, typical Richmond Hill home, in the lobby with the window and the slit in the door, south and west side. Okay. Now, how do I keep this thing alive? I see that the leaves are dropping, but I also see green little tips growing.
That's good.
It's not dying. How do I keep it alive for the rest of its life?
Okay. Well, it could live for a very long time. But if you do have a nice big lobby, it sounds like it's nice and bright with the south and the west windows. That's all good. The one thing that ficus, it's actually a weeping fig, likely, or Benjamina, ficus Benjamina. The one thing it does not like is cold drafts. So if it's near the front door and people are going in and out that door, it will not be ultimately a very happy plant. But it is a good sign that it's showing new green little tiny buds. That indicates that the fact that it's dropping leaves is completely normal. You cannot move that plant 3 feet in your house and not have it drop leaves. We always say as soon as you move it, even look at it sideways, it'll drop leaves. But it will, if it's happy and healthy, grow new ones. And the ones it's growing, the new leaves, will be perfect for where it's now placed. Those leaves will be designed for the light levels in your current lobby area of your home. As long as it's at least, hopefully, 8, 9, 10 feet away from that front door, like away from drafts, no hot air drafts, no cold air drafts. And then the main thing when it comes to watering is just water it when it's dry. It's hard to know that when it's a big plant like that, how, you know, when to water. So you'd be a good candidate to get something called a moisture meter. And that's just a little probe that goes in the soil, helps you find out how much moisture is down, you know, a foot or so down under the surface of the soil. We can stick our fingers down, but that's only a couple inches. So you want to go down a little deeper with a moisture meter, and then you have a better idea of what the moisture levels are like. If it's showing wet on the meter, of course, you will not water until it's on the dry side. And when you water, water thoroughly. No fertilizer until next March.
Okay.
All right.
Now, she says that when it was in her office by her office window, the gardener would come in once every 2 weeks and dumps in a whole lot of water.
Right.
And that's all he did, and he grew beautifully.
Yeah.
So should I follow the same principle?
Likely that would work. What it's going to depend on is, so that's a thorough watering, and that's important. So we water rarely, but we water thoroughly. So that's what was happening every 2 weeks, lots of water. So that's good. But keeping in mind that temperature matters and light levels matter. So if her office was similar to your lobby in terms of light and temperature, that exact same routine will work. If you're a little darker or a little cooler than she was, then maybe it'd be every 3 weeks that you would water. So do get a hold of that moisture meter and just be confident when you do water and water thoroughly.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, thank you
Sounds
very
lovely.
Much. And we miss you here in Richmond Hill.
I know.
I'm sort of your neighbor.
I kind of miss Richmond Hill too, so I hear you. Thank you. Well, enjoy. It sounds like it's going to be very pretty in your lobby.
It is. It is pretty. I've got lots of other plans too.
Great.
Thank you.
Nice to hear from you, Catherine.
Thank you for joining us on this wintry morning. My gosh.
Well, yeah, you've been in Florida. You don't know what we've been putting up with.
Well, no. I can appreciate it.
However, you can.
I'm glad I didn't have to be here.
The tornado winds.
Speaking of wintertime and arrival of things, Santa is coming tomorrow.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
To the big Santa
all
Claus
over
parade.
The world, yeah, actually. Parades everywhere.
How he shows up at all these places.
At once.
Amazing.
I know. He's
magic.
Cloning. He's into cloning.
Yep. I think so. hey, it's been fun this morning.
It's been nice to have you back.
Getting back into the grind, which is not really the grind for me. The grind, yeah. I sit here and give the phone numbers, and Charlie does all the work.
That's okay. But you share good little anecdotes, and you're the nematode guy. You know all about that.
Of course, yeah.
I don't know why, but you've somehow managed to grab that word nematode and run with it.
I'm looking forward to Brekkie's. So we go across the street to...
imagine am I buying or are you buying?
I got to figure that out.
Oh, okay. If it's it's steak and eggs. You know that, right?
burnt toast for you. Okay.
Dry toast for you.
Thanks,
so
Charlie.
So you're back in a little while, I imagine, this afternoon?
Yeah, 2 o'clock this afternoon, 2 to 3.30.
You're ready to go to talk about what's on in this city and the city you left behind back in the warmth of the southern states?
Exactly.
Well, like I say, Frank, it's great to have you back.
Thank you very much.
Missed you. And Duncan couldn't do without your help.
Yes.
Thank you a ton. Great callers, as usual. Keep those great calls coming. Happy to hear from you. And we will see you all again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.